So this Sunday, we begin the season of Epiphany. And it seems appropriate in a new decade. And so why don't we do this to begin? Maybe turn to a neighbor and think about this question. How do you feel about being almost there? So it could be a project, could be a trip, could be a destination. How does that make you feel? All right, I'll give you a couple minutes. All right. So show of hands. How many of us like being almost there? Okay. How many of us dislike being almost there? Okay. Pretty even. So I was thinking through this. Last week, I rode a race, bike race, that was 113 miles. So our club has thrown this race for the last 4 years, and I've never gotten to ride it because I've been organizing it or shooting pictures. And this year I was like, I'm not going to be in charge of anything. I'm just going to ride the race. So I was riding this race, 130 miles. It's probably in terms of range of riders, one of the biggest ranges. So we have some pictures. It spanned from a guy who's ridden the Tour de France to people who just ride hybrid bikes. So here's some pictures. The guy in the pink. So in terms of a race with the clock and individual time trials, that guy's fifth in the world. He just showed up to the race. The guy, you can't see, he's in the helmet in the back. He finished in 5.5 hours, 130 miles. Very impressive. The last finishers came in at 11 hours. I'm not sure which is more impressive. Yeah. So you can cycle through the pictures. So I started the race. It started really fast, really hot. I was with the lead group. I was 20 miles in, and I was like, this is too fast. I have another 100 miles to go. So I sat up. I knew there were friends coming, and then the friends finally caught me, and we had a good time. So we had store stops. We enjoyed ourselves. Keep going. The weather was perfect, and then keep going. So we get to this last stop, and we're in Manor. So if you ride bikes, Manor is a pretty frequent place you ride to. It feels like we're almost there. We were so close, and everyone's enjoying themselves. They're drinking like tall boys, and I'm like, guys, we're so close. We got to keep going. You know that feeling of being almost there? You know that feeling. So David White, the Irish poet, he says that feeling of being almost there, that's what life feels like. That's actually the human experience. This is what he says. Close is what we almost always are. Close to happiness, close to another, close to leaving, close to tears, close to God, close to losing faith, close to being done. Close to saying something or close to success. And even with the greatest sense of satisfaction, close to giving the whole thing up. Our human essence lies not in arrival, but in being almost there. We are creatures who are on the way, our journey a series of impending anticipated arrivals. And so this morning I want to propose that not only does life feel like that, I want to propose that perhaps Epiphany feels like that. That's why most of us in the season of Epiphany, we're not like, hey, just had an Epiphany. It feels like we almost always are about to experience an Epiphany. So I want to give us a framework that I think is a helpful way to contemplate life, to contemplate Epiphany, contemplate the scriptures. And it's a framework that goes like this. So you start with order. So your order is usually tribal. It's about structure and rules. It's about law and morality. Most organized religion stays at this first phase. It's just about order. The first order, where we all begin, is a necessary first containment. But this structure is dangerous if we stay there too long. It's too small and self-serving. It must be deconstructed by the trials and vagaries of life. The cross. Disorder. Initial order doesn't really know the full picture, but it thinks it does. Okay, so that's the first phase. Then we move into the necessary, important phase of disorder, which involves death, undoing. A lot of theologians have called this the dark night of the soul. Last month I called it liminal space. And liminal space sounds really nice, but it feels like death. God teaches the soul most profoundly through darkness and not just light. We only need just enough light to be able to trust the darkness. Trials and darkness teach us how to trust in a very practical way that a good God is guiding us. Now I can trust that even my mistakes will be used in my favor if I allow them to be. Darkness, mistakes, and trials are the supreme teachers. And then we move into reorder. But you have to go through disorder before we get to reorder, which is about salvation, resurrection, and for our purposes this morning, epiphany. Couldn't help myself, sorry. You gotta throw some cheese in there sometimes. Only in the final reorder stage can darkness and light coexist. Can paradox be okay? We are finally at home in the only world that ever existed. This is true and contemplative knowing. Here, death is a part of life. Failure is a part of victory. Imperfection is included in perfection. Opposites collide and unite, and everything belongs. We dare not get rid of our pain before we have learned what it has to teach us. Most religion gives us answers too quickly, dismisses our pain too easily, and seeks to be distracted to maintain some ideal order. So does this make sense? This is why life, this is why epiphany feels like you're close, you're almost there. Because different parts of your life are in different phases. Some parts are in order, some parts are in disorder, some parts are in reorder. And so if you read the scriptures, every story is trying to show us this pattern. And this morning we're in Isaiah 42, and it actually gives us this very basic structure. So we'll walk through it and unpack it a little bit more. So we start in verse 5. Thus says God the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, gives breath to the people who walk upon it, and spirit to those who walk in it. And so this is evoking Genesis 1, where God's breath and spirit is bringing forth goodness and beauty. So I want to try this morning. We've done this in a similar way. I want to do it slightly different. So I want us to feel the emotion that God feels about creation, okay? So think of the tastiest thing you've ever put in your mouth, like food, hopefully. So it could be chocolate. Could be pizza. Could be, stay with me, food. Could be an empanada. Could be pho. Could be roasted duck. For me, surprisingly recently, have you ever had the Italian sub at Home Slice? Pretty good. Okay, so think of that thing, that delicious. You got it? Okay, we're going to practice something. So we're going to say, like for 3 seconds, from the gut though, like, and then we're going to say, so good at the end. So 3 seconds of and then so good. So think of that thing. Ready? So good. Okay, you got it? Okay, so we're feeling that. Okay. Now think of the most beautiful thing or breathtaking thing in creation. So it could be like a baby French bulldog. It could be a 100-foot waterfall. It could be the Grand Canyon. Okay, just picture one. You got it? So you're in agreement with God on this one, right? We can feel what God's feeling. So ready? 3 seconds. So good. All right. Everyone take out your phone. Turn on your camera. Face the camera at your face. look into the lens. Look into the lens and take a picture of yourself. Okay. No retakes, just the first one. Okay? So look into the lens so you're looking at yourself. Okay. Now look at that face. Look at it. Don't look at me. Look at your face. Okay. What do we think? A 9? A 7? Just keep looking. Don't look away. Keep looking. Now think about your life. Keep looking at your face. Think about all the good things in your life. Think of the things you didn't imagine, the friendships you have, the place you're living in, the city, the sun, your job maybe that you love. Think of just the good things. Okay, keep looking at your face. Okay? Now think of all the hard things in your life. Keep looking. The disappointments, the mistakes, the regrets, all of that. Okay? God can get there. Most of us can see it in you. It takes faith to see it in ourselves. So look at the picture. On the count of three, we're giving it 3 seconds. I know we can't feel it, but trust that this is what God sees. On the count of three. So good. It's our original beauty. And this is how this starts. This is what Isaiah is saying. It's beautiful. You're beautiful. All of it. Then he keeps going. And in verse 6, I think this is interesting. He says, I am the Lord. I have called you in righteousness. I've given you some rules, some basic parameters. But how Isaiah talks about it, he talks about it in a way that's a very young way of relating. He says, I have taken you by the hand and kept you. So I've held you, and you needed this initial structure and boundary for your goodness to blossom and flourish. But the structure is just a structure. The structure is only as important until it's not that important. Let me give an example. So I'm teaching a homiletics class in March up in Seattle. Homiletics is about giving homily sermons. I like that it sounds like athletics, because it is not. So I'm guest teaching, I'm preparing the lesson, and the one thing that's really important to me is structure. So people tell me as a pastor my sermons are like weird. So they assume that I have a different structure. My structure is actually the most basic of structures. It's an intro, 3 points, and a conclusion. And I tell them, the structure doesn't really, just pick one. It's just the structure for the beauty to flourish. Does that make sense? So this is the example I use, or I'm going to use. So how many of us are fans of Arrested Development? Okay. Maybe one of the more innovative comedies in the last few decades, right? So Mitch Hurwitz, who created this, he cut his teeth on the Golden Girls. He says the Golden Girls in the Arrested Development have the exact same comedic structure, exact same. The only thing that's different is tone. So the structure doesn't, it's just the container that holds your life. Does that make sense? So in the scriptures, it's just the first stage. This is Moses in a basket that floats him to the palace. This is Jesus in a manger that takes him to Nazareth. We don't know anything about the first 30 years of Jesus' life. He's just got the structure. He's a carpenter. He's got the structure. It's not that important. It's the thing that holds your beauty to flourish. Does it make sense? It's the woman born in Samaria. It's John the Baptist's fashion choices. Abram and Job's success and wealth. It's Esther's royalty. It's just structure that allows your beauty to flourish. So in the first order where we all begin, is a necessary first containment. But this structure is dangerous if we stay here too long. It is too small, too self-serving, must be deconstructed by the trials and vagaries of life, the cross, disorder. Initial order doesn't really know the full picture, but it thinks it does. So this is just where you live, what you do, the house you're going to live in, whether you're going to partner, who you're going to partner with, whether you're going to have kids, the kids you have. It's just the basic building of the structure of your life. Okay? Then we get to disorder. And Isaiah says, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring out prisoners from the dungeon, from the prison who sits in darkness. I am the Lord, that is my name, my glory I give to no other, nor my praise to idols. So Isaiah is talking about blindness, imprisonment, darkness, death. It's the most important part of spiritual transformation, and we're terrified of it. We run from it. I would say this is darkness and death. It's the crux of our faith. It's the engine of spiritual transformation. It's the pathway to epiphany. It's one symbol. This is our symbol. It's one symbol that tells a story. It doesn't even need words. It's Christ on a cross. And I grew up in a fundamentalist Protestant tradition, and we took this deeply, deeply profound symbol, and we're like, Jesus on a cross seems negative. Jesus seems super hot. He's like ripped, but he's like dead. I'm going to take Jesus on a cross and put him on my neck. Right? And somehow we took the most profound thing and we removed it, and then we proceeded to use God's name in vain. And Isaiah says that's idolatry. If we think we can barter with God with morality and think that somehow just those with the most willpower and the people who look like us and believe like us have this VIP space in the afterlife, Isaiah says that's not the God that's real, that invites us into life itself. So let's ask this question. What part of your life right now feels like you're walking in the dark, like you've lost control? Like, what part of your life feels like that right now? Like we're walking around blindfolded. We can't really see. We're taking one step at a time. Some of us, maybe it's health. Others of us, maybe it's work stuff. Some of us, maybe it's a friendship. It's a relationship. Or maybe we can ask it this way. What part of your life do you feel stuck? Like you're imprisoned? Like you don't really know how you got there. You don't know how to get out. Like there's a lot of regret. There's a lot of, if I would have said yes, or I wish I didn't say yes. And what if our blindness, our darkness, our stuckness is an important part of epiphany? David White says it like this. Half of all human experience is mediated through loss and disappearance. Half. So this is one of the reasons why we won't have the conversation with life to live it. It's too much. So I have a current creative crush. His name is Andy Goldsworthy. Does anyone know? So he's a British artist, and he works and plays with nature. He talks about growth and change and how nature does it naturally, and his art's trying to point us towards that. So I'm going to show you a trailer. It's an endearingly bad quality trailer that kind of gives you a picture of his art, and then we're going to show the clip where he basically is making this exact same point in a beautifully profound way. So check out the trailer.
Growth, time, change, and the idea of flow in nature. When I make a work, I often take it to the very edge of its collapse. And that's a very beautiful balance. I want to understand that state and that energy that I have in me, that I also feel in the plants and in the land. energy and life that, that is running through the flowing through the landscape.
So before I show the next clip, so he builds these structures, and the one we're about to see, he spent hours and hours. Like multiple times he got to the last piece and the whole thing collapsed, like multiple times. And then you see what happens. So check out the next clip.
The sea came in and the cone just disappeared and then was gone, but it was still there. A work that I'd only just finished making, so my contact with the stone was still very, very strong. So I was with it down there, but I still couldn't see it. What I have touched on this time is that I haven't simply made the piece to be destroyed by the sea. The work has been given to the sea as a gift, and the sea has taken the work and made more of it than I could have ever hoped or for. And I think that if I can see in that ways of understanding those things that happen to us in life, that changes our lives, that causes upheavals and shock, can't explain that.
He said he built this structure and gave it to the sea as a gift, that the sea could do more with it than he could even imagine. And perhaps this morning is our life, our dreams, our hopes that we've spent so much time on. Are we willing to give that to God as a gift and to trust that he can do more with it that we can even dream or imagine? And that somehow that comes through upheaval and shock. And it's really hard to explain. Really hard. And so perhaps this morning, the parts of our lives that feel like they're underwater, perhaps we're close to epiphany. We're close. In the scriptures, this is Moses' Red Sea. It's Sarai's barrenness. It's Saul's blindness. Jacob's limp. It's Paul's thorn. It's Christ on the cross. So let's just meditate on this icon. Think of how profound a symbol it is. Without words, one symbol that speaks of the deepest human experience, the deepest human transformation in one symbol. Last year, I went through a lot personally. I remember staring at this symbol and thinking, oh, I got to live this? I don't want to live this. I thought I could just talk about it. I thought I could just like believe in it. But I actually have to go through that. And it's transformative. Julian of Norwich says, first the fall, then the recovery from the fall. Both are mercy of God. So I want us to think of the part of our life where it feels like we're imprisoned or stuck. Okay. Like think of that very specific thing. And then I'm going to read you a poem. So you can either close your eyes, you can find your center, take a few deep breaths. You can follow along on the screen with me if you'd like. But think of that part of your life right now. It feels like you've lost control or that you're stuck. Rilke says this, quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Go ahead and take a couple deep breaths. Quiet friend who has come so far, feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower, and you the bell. As you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. Move back and forth into the chain. What is it like, such intensity of pain? What is it like? If the drink is bitter, turn yourself to wine. In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses. The meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. To the rushing water, speak, I am. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. We finish this up in verse 9. Isaiah says, see, the former things have come to pass, and new things I now declare. So once we're willing to go through the disorder, the disorientation, the death, there's new things that are about to spring forth. And I declare before they spring forth, I tell you of them. So through that passage, then comes reorder, salvation. Epiphany. So let me ask this question. So your original beauty, you might be able to picture it in your younger self, maybe as a baby, right? It was there. It was always there. Is your original beauty still blossoming? How might your original beauty continue to flourish? Like, what's your beauty going to look like in 2025? 2030, 2050. Are you done blossoming? David White says it like this. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. So, Jay-Z made an album about the Enneagram. It's called 444. I thought that was a good joke. I knew you probably wouldn't laugh, but I liked it. So on the song, on the album, he's got a song there about his mom. It's called Smile. And in 2018, so Jay-Z's 50. So in 2018, his mom came out to him for the first time. And she told him that she was in love. And he cried. And he said, "Mom, I want to write a song about it." And she was super hesitant because her son's Jay-Z, like the whole world would know. And then on a plane ride, she says, "Fine, you can use my story, but I want you to include this poem." And she read the poem. He recorded it, and it's at the end of the song. So I'm going to read you one of the lines from the song, and then we'll watch her read her poem. He said, "Mama had four kids, but she's a lesbian. Had to pretend so long that she's a thespian. Had to hide in the closet so she medicate. Society, shame, and the pain was too much to take. Cried tears of joy when you fell in love. Don't matter to me if it's a him or a her." So check out the clip.
Living in the shadow. Can you imagine what kind of life it is to live? In the shadows, people see you as happy and free because that's what you want them to see. Living two lives, happy but not free. You live in the shadows for fear of someone hurting your family or the person you love. The world is changing and it's time to be free. But you live with the fear of just being me. Living in this shadow feels like the safe place to be. No harm for them, no harm for me. But life is short and it's time to be free. Love who you love because life isn't guaranteed. Smile.
Yes.
It's not beautiful. And I think the most beautiful part of it is she was almost 70 and her beauty was still blossoming. Springing forth into this world. And so as we close, I'm going to read the full poem of the David White. And he says this: "Close is what we almost always are. Close to happiness, close to another, close to leaving, close to tears, close to God, close to losing faith, close to being done. Close to saying something or close to success or even with the greatest sense of satisfaction, close to giving the whole thing up. Our human essence lies not in arrival, but in being almost there. We are creatures who are on the way, our journey a series of impending anticipated arrivals. We live by unconsciously measuring the inverse distances of our proximity. An intimacy calibrated by the vulnerability we feel by giving up our sense of separation. To go beyond our normal identities and to become closer than close is to lose our sense of self in temporary joy. A form of arrival that only opens up to us to deeper forms of intimacy that blur our fixed, controlling surface identities. To consciously become close is a courageous form of unilateral disarmament, a chancing of our arm and our love, a willingness to hazard our affections in an unconscious declaration that we might be equal to the inevitable loss that the vulnerability of being close will bring. Human beings do not find their essence through fulfillment or even eventual arrival. But by staying close to the way they like to travel, to the way they hold a conversation between the ground on which they stand and the horizon to which they go, we are in effect always close to the ultimate secret that we are more real in our simple wish to find a way than any destination we could reach. The step between understanding that not understanding that and understanding that is as close as we get to epiphany. And we pray this in the creation of the Father, the crucifixion of the Son, and the resurrection of the Holy Spirit.